2 Samuel 23. 2 Samuel chapter 23. The first Saul is the second Saul then come with the name. So the storm passes by. Thank you. Good storm out of that. The storm passes by. I remember leaving that Lafayette 3 or 4 years ago now. And one of the older gentlemen, who was 94 years old at the time, came up to me and said, "Ryan, I served in World War II, and I remember one night as a pilot, I had to fly over the Atlantic. And that song was almost like I was back in the Atlantic." He passed away a couple years ago, but just a jewel of a man. That song always brings that memory back. So what I like to do this afternoon is just go through some teachings of 2 Samuel chapter 23. I talked about the mighty men this morning, and so I'm not going to rehash the message from that. But I just want to look at a few principles from these mighty men. Okay? So, as you work through 2 Samuel 23, this is a chapter that, honestly, I have skipped over a lot, because it's a lot of names. Anytime I see a bunch of names in a chapter, my first instinct is to pass it by and not pay much attention. This is one of those chapters, though, much like Matthew 1, the genealogy of Christ, much like 2 Timothy 4, Paul's final readings, this is a list of names that actually has a lot of spiritual depth to it. And I want to illustrate this in about 6 different scenarios. None of these are going to take much time. But I want to show y'all 6 different cases in this chapter that really demonstrate some spiritual principles you can get from this list. So let's just begin in verse 8. 2 Samuel 23, verse 8. These are the names of the mighty men whom David had. Josheph Bashabeth, a Tekoamite, he was chief of the 3. He wielded his spear against 800 whom he killed at one time. So you'll notice there is, at the very end, verse 39, the list of 37. If you compare this, I mentioned this morning, let me expound on this just a bit. 1 Chronicles chapter 11 is the corresponding chapter to this in the Chronicles. There's some question about exactly how many and how they line up. But understand, about 37 to 40 individuals is what we're talking about. And out of the thousands that David had commanded, these are around the 37 that really have some noteworthy aspect to their name. Of the 37, there are 3 that are the most mighty. The first of which is Josheph Bashabeth. Okay? Number 2 is Eleazar, verse 9. Next to him, among the 3 mighty men, was Eleazar, the son of Dodo. This is hard. Son of Ahilai. He was with David when they defied the Philistines, who were gathered there for battle, and the men of Israel withdrew. He rose and struck down the Philistines until his hand was weary, and his hand clung to his sword. And the Lord brought about a great victory that day, and the men returned to him only to strip the slain. Verse 11. Next to him was Shimei, the son of Ahi the Hararite. The Philistines gathered at Lehi, where there was a plot full of ground full of lentils. And the men fled from the Philistines. But he took his stand in the midst of the plot and defended it, and struck down the Philistines, and the Lord worked a great victory. So I want to draw our first principle from Shimei. Shimei, verse 11. My guess is you've not heard of Shimei. He's not one of the great figures of the Bible. But I think there's an interesting moral tale here for us. You'll notice what Shimei does. The Philistines were gathered at Lehi, where there was a plot of ground full of lentils, and the men fled from the Philistines. So here, you understand the setting. This is a field filled with lentils. Okay? He's not protecting Fort Knox, nor is he protecting the temple. He's protecting a field full of beans. But he took his stand in the midst of the plot and defended it, and struck down the Philistines, and the Lord worked a great victory. Here's the first principle I think we learned from Shimei. Stand your ground. Stand your ground. You'll notice here the context. He is fighting, of course, amidst David's mighty men and the Philistines, who are the chief antagonists of the entire life of David. They come up against him. Shimei is going to meet them in a field, and he's going to stand his ground. And there's not much else we know about him, rather than he stood his ground amidst a field of lentils. So, brother, the question I think we have to ask ourselves is, do you stand your ground? Do you stand your ground? I remember a teacher of mine asking me years ago, he used this very case as an illustration. In a world that is unchanging and that is constantly assaulting faith, will you stand your ground? Will you stand your ground? When enemies come against you and forces are against you, will you stand your ground? And he's not king, he's not a great leader. All he does is he stands his ground. And I think for us so often, I at least, whenever you hear somebody do great things, aspire to greatness, when really the thing we really should be after is just being grounded in God. Just standing our ground. So what do the mighty men teach us? Lesson one, stand your ground. Continue with me. Go down to verse 13. Three of the 30 chief men went and came to the harvest time to David at the cave of Adullam, when a band of Philistines encamped in the valley of Rephaim. David was then in the stronghold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then at Bethlehem. David said longingly, "Oh, that someone would give me water to drink from the well of Bethlehem that is by the gate." Then the three mighty men broke through the camp of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate and carried and brought it to David. But he would not drink it. He poured it out to Yahweh and said, "Far be it from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Shall I drink the blood of men who went out to risk their lives?" Therefore he would not drink it. These things the three mighty men did. Lesson one, of course, from Shammah, stand your ground. But lesson two, here you have the three that we've read about that do a great thing. And the greatness they do is bringing a cup of water to someone who's thirsty. Again, how many people are in history books for bringing water to someone? Typically, the water boy is the most forgotten player on the field. But this is a case where the water boy, or the water boys, are going to be the one recorded in history. Why? Because verse 15, the king's David said, "Oh, that someone would give me water to drink from the well of Bethlehem that is by the gate." Then the three mighty men broke through the camp of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate and carried and brought it to David. You can just imagine all of the details that this verse doesn't tell us about how did they break through? How many men did they have to kill to get this water? Who do they have to go with? There's a whole narrative not even in the text here for us. But lesson two that I think these three teach us is sometimes all you're able to do is give somebody a cup of water. Sometimes all you need to do is give somebody a cup of water. Now, you can imagine for David that this is not just water. Remember, where was David from? Where was David born? Bethlehem. So I think for David, there's significance, of course, to this water being from Bethlehem. Perhaps, you know, some childhood reminiscence to him that he has with his water. But when these three mighty men hear that their chief needs water, they don't get water. Then David, of course, out of the humility of his heart, he cannot begin to drink it, knowing that they've risked their own lives for water. But still, brethren, I think it's a lesson for us, how sacrificial are we, and how much are we willing to give for others. So lesson one, stand your ground. Lesson two, sometimes just get somebody a cup of water. Lesson three is going to actually come from Benaiah. I'm going to skip a few verses and come back to them, but I want to pick up in verse 20. Look at Benaiah. Then Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was a valiant man of Kabzeel, a doer of great deeds. He struck down two Ariels of Moab. He also went down and struck down a lion in a pit on a day when the snow had fallen. And he struck down an Egyptian, a handsome man. The Egyptian had a spear in his hand, but Benaiah went down to him with a staff and snatched the spear out of the Egyptian's hand and killed him with his own spear. These things did Benaiah the son of Jehoiada do, and what a name besides the three mighty men. He was renowned among the 30, but he did not attain to the three, and David set him over his bodyguard. So you'll notice what Benaiah does here. Benaiah finds an Egyptian who has a spear in his hand. He is going to take the spear from this man, kill him, and win the victory. Now, the lesson from Benaiah is loyalty. This is what Benaiah teaches us. There's not much known about Benaiah just from this chapter, but I'm going to fill in just a bit of the history for you. If you go through 1 Kings chapters 1 and chapter 2, let's do just a couple of verses. Go with me to 1 Kings chapter 1. 1 Kings chapter 1. This is right after Solomon was anointed king during the process of it. Look at verse 32. 1 Kings chapter 1 and verse 32. King David said, "Call to me Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, Benaiah the son of Jehoiada." So they came before the king. The king said to them, "Take with you the servants of your lord, and have Solomon my son ride on my mule, and bring him down to God. And let Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet therefore anoint him king over Israel, and blow the trumpet and say, 'Long live King Solomon.'" Verse 36. And Benaiah the son of Jehoiada answered and said, "Amen. May the Lord, the God of my lord, the king, say so. As the Lord has been with my lord, the king, even so may he be Solomon, and may his throne be greater than the throne of my lord, King David." As you go through the narrative in 1 Kings chapter 1 and 2, remember, this is an extremely tumultuous time in the life of David because of Adonijah. David, it seems like a king in a hip as you go through 1 and 2 Samuel. But then, as he nears death, his son Adonijah is going to try to set himself up as king. It's a really bad time, because whereas during the revolt of Absalom, most of David's chief loyal to him remained chiefly loyal, Adonijah's very different. David's about to die, they know it. And so you find a split among his mighty men. Of all of his mighty men, who is David going to call when he needs his son strengthened? He's going to call Benaiah. He's going to call Benaiah. Because he understands that whereas Joab has just become a traitor by this point, Benaiah is going to be loyal to the king. And that's why, as you look over to chapter 2 of 1 Kings, look over to chapter 2. Notice what David's going to tell him. 1 Kings chapter 2, skip down to verse 35. Then Solomon puts Benaiah the son of Jehoiada over the army in the place of Joab, and the king put Zadok the priest in the place of Abiathar. Benaiah is going to be fiercely loyal to the king. Because whereas you have Joab and so many of the mighty men traitorous by this point, Benaiah is going to be fiercely loyal. So the lesson from Benaiah: he may not be chief of the three, nor may he be of the king's household, but he's loyal. He's a loyal, mighty man who gives himself over to the king. It's already three great lessons. Shammah teaches us to stand our ground. The three teach us sometimes just give a cup of water. Benaiah teaches us loyalty. But what else do we learn? As you continue down through the list, I want us to look at the very last verse. Look down to verse 39. Uriah the Hittite, 37 in all. I want you to understand, by the time this is written, Uriah has already died. You'll remember with me, Uriah the Hittite is the husband of Bathsheba, who King David kills. This occurs in 2 Samuel chapter 11. So by this point, Uriah has been killed by David. But still, who is mentioned among the mighty men? Uriah the Hittite, 37 and all. Whenever David had called Uriah to come to him and change his plans, Uriah would do it. Because Uriah knew he had a duty to fulfill. And his duty was to God and to his army and to his people. And Uriah was dutiful in what he did. And I think the lesson that Uriah teaches us is duty. Duty. When you look at what he does, and you look at his character, and you even look at how I think he was a husband, Uriah is a man of duty. The question I think we have to ask ourselves is, what duty do we have? You remember the parable where Jesus told of the servant, to where he tells his master, "Oh, all that I've only given to you is my service. All that is only due to you is what I've given." He does his duty. As Otis pointed out in one of our studies, there's no word more sublime in the English language than that of beauty. He doesn't do it. So four lessons already. Shammah teaches us to stand our ground. The three teach us to be honest. Benaiah teaches us to be loyal. Uriah teaches us to be dutiful. Well, let's now talk about the two others. I want to talk about this one for a bit more later. Abishai. He was one of our leaders. So hopefully some of you will remember Abishai. Look down at verse 18. Now Abishai, back in 2 Samuel 23. Now Abishai, the brother of Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was chief of the third. And he welded his spear against 300 men and killed them and won a name besides the three. He was the most renowned of the three and became the commander, but he did not attain to the three. Here you have Abishai. Now let's do a bit of genealogy to figure out who Abishai is. Abishai is the brother of Joab, the son of Zeruiah. That makes him David's nephew. David had three nephews that served in his army. Asahel, Joab, and Abishai. What does Abishai teach us? Okay? To answer this, I want to juxtapose him with his brother Joab. Okay, so this is actually going to be number 5 and number 6. If you'll look quickly through verses 24 down through 39, do you see Joab? Well, if you look at verse 24, you see Asahel, the brother of Joab. Verse 18, you see Abishai, the brother of Joab. But you don't see Joab. And if you remember, we just read from 1 Kings 1 and 2, Joab was commander of the army. Isn't it interesting that the mightiest of warriors, who had more power than any other, is not in 2 Samuel 23. Joab's not in 1 Chronicles 11 either. It's not a mistake. Joab's not here. Why is Asahel and why is Abishai in 2 Samuel 23? But Joab is not. Now, Bruce knows my feelings of Joab. We disagree on this a bit. But I'm making Joab a hard time for a minute because he deserves it. Let's look at Abishai, first of all. Okay, let's talk about Abishai. As you look back to 1 Samuel chapter 26, you're going to see the character of Abishai. 1 Samuel chapter 26. Pick up in verse 6. This is, by the way, let me give you the context of this. 1 Samuel 24, David spares Saul's life. 1 Samuel 25 is the story of the field. And then in 1 Samuel 26 is another story similar to that of 24. Verse 6. David said to Ahimelech the Hittite, and to Joab's brother Abishai the son of Zeruiah, who will go down with me into the camp of Saul? And Abishai said, I will go down with you. So David and Abishai went to the army by night. And there lay Saul sleeping within the encampment with his spear struck down in the ground in his head. And Abner and the army lay around him. Then Abishai said to David, I'm going to tell y'all just one detail real quick. Abner, do y'all remember who Abner is? Serves with Saul. But Abner kills Asahel. He kills Abishai's brother. So he's brought face to face with his mortal enemy. Verse 8. Abishai said to David, God has given your enemy into your hand this day. Now please let me pin him to the earth with one stroke of the spear, and I will not strike him twice. Nor will he strike him three times. He'll strike him once. But David said to Abishai, do not destroy him, for who can put out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? And David said, as the Lord lives, The Lord will strike him, or his day will come to die, but he will go down into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should put out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But take now the spear that is in his hand, and the jar of water, and let us go. So David took the spear and the jar of water from Saul's hand, and they went away. No man saw it or knew it, nor did any awake, for they were all asleep, because a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen upon them. Do you notice what Abishai does? When given the choice of vengeance, he takes the high road. David is brought face to face with his enemy Saul. Abishai is brought face to face with his enemy Abner. And he's going to choose the high road. Another story about Abishai. Look over to 2 Samuel 16. 2 Samuel chapter 16. 2 Samuel 16. This is amidst, well, let me set the context of the story. This is amidst the rebellion of Absalom. You remember that Absalom, David's son, had risen himself against the king, and because of this is going to try to find rebellion against David. You're going to find one character here named Shimei. Shimei is interesting, and notice why. 2 Samuel 16, and look down to verse 5. When King David came to Bethhoron, there came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. And he came and he cursed continually. He threw stones at David and at all the servants of King David, and all the people of the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And Shimei said as he cursed, "Get out! Get out, you man of blood, you worthless man. The Lord has avenged on you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned, and the Lord has given you the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. See, your evil is on you, for you are a man of blood." Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, "Why should this dead dog curse the Lord the king? Let me go over and take off its head." But the king said, "What have I to do with you, you son of Zeruiah? If he is cursing you because the Lord has said to him, 'Curse David,' who then shall say, 'Why have you done so?" And David said to Abishai and to all his servants, "Behold, my own son seeks my life. How much more now may be this Benjaminite? Leave him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has told him to. It may be that the Lord will look on the wrong done to me, and that the Lord will repay me with good for his cursing today." So David and his men went on the road with Shimei. He went along the hillside opposite him and cursed as he went through stones at him and flung dust. And the king and all the people who were with him arrived weary at the land of Jordan. And there they refreshed himself. Do you notice what Abishai wants to do? Again, Abishai wants to follow in the path of Joab. He wants to kill him. But when his commander, his leader David, tells him, "Spare him, don't do it," what does Abishai do? He listens. He listens. And I think that is what really sets Joab apart from Abishai. As you go throughout the narrative of Absalom's rebellion, David is going to give the command, "Don't kill Absalom." You want to guess who's going to oversee that? Joab. Do you know who gets Uriah the Hittite killed? Joab. You want to guess who's going to get vengeance for his brother Asahel? Joab. Do you know who's going to do pretty much what he thinks best? Joab. Abishai was a flawed man, just as much as David and all of these characters were. But he listens to his king. And that's why, as you go over to 1 Kings chapter 2, one of the last commands that David is going to give is going to concern Joab. 1 Kings chapter 2, pick up in verse 5. This is David speaking to Saul. Moreover, you also know what Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me, how he dealt with the two commanders of the armies of Israel, Abner, the son of Ner, Amasa, the son of Jether, whom he killed, avenging in time of peace for blood what had been shed in war, and putting the blood of war on the belt around his waist and on the sandals of his feet. Now therefore, according to your wisdom, do not let his gray head go down to Sheol in peace, but deal loyally with the sons of Barzillai and Gileadite, and let them be among those who eat at your table, for with such loyalty they met me when I fled from Absalom your brother. And there is also with you Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjaminite, Aaron, who cursed me with a grievous curse on the day when I went to Manahem. And when he came down to meet me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with a sword. Now therefore do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man. You know what you also ought to do with him, and you shall bring his gray head down with blood to Sheol. What does he command his son to do? Kill Joab. Abishai will be spared, because Abishai was loyal to the king. But Joab will meet his demise, because by this point he's really sought rebellion against him. But that's the way of Joab. Now, Bruce's theory of Joab is that Joab is a nationalist. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I've said before, Joab is somewhere between Severus Snape and Steve Bannon. When you look at how he acts and how he behaves, it's just that national, deeply nationalistic ideas in Joab. But Abishai is going to listen to the king. And he's going to be loyal to the king. And even when he seeks vengeance, he will follow in the way of David. So what does Abishai teach us? Abishai teaches us to obey and forgive. Joab teaches us the downfall of vengeance. And that, I think, is the chief lesson from Joab that we need to learn. When we seek vengeance, vengeance will come back upon us. So before we close, let's turn to Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12. Pick up in verse 12 of chapter 12. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own eyes. Repay no one evil for evil. Give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay it, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For so by doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Isn't it interesting that the instruction given in command in Romans 12 is told in story in 2 Samuel 23? So, brethren, I ask you, who are your heroes? Who are your heroes in the Bible? That's always one of my conversation starters I ask whenever I'm trying to begin a spiritual conversation with somebody. Who's a character in the Bible you like? And I almost always get the same answers. I love Paul. He wrote some great books. Jesus did some great things. A light day, Moses parted the Red Sea. But brethren, the Bible's full of interesting, inspiring role models. I told y'all still, one of my role models is Shemaiah, who during the division of the kingdom stayed faithful to the Levites and stayed faithful to the king. I love Shem, who even when he was in a field of lentils, stood his ground. I look up to Abishai, who is far more noble than me because he sought not vengeance on his own side. Benaiah reminds me to be loyal. Who are your role models? Who are your heroes? I think one of the sad parts, at least I've noticed in the way that history is taught most ways now, the popular trend in history is to defame any historical figure of the past. There's no activity more popular than trying to defame the founding fathers, trying to take down our great heroes of old and just try to show all the evils that they did. Yes, they were flawed, yeah. Much as everyone who's ever lived is. But brethren, I ask you, who are your role models? Who do you look up to? Who do you aspire to be? The lessons are in the scriptures, not slow. If you're using your song, you can go ahead now. I hope y'all did notice, 2 Samuel 23. Benaiah went down and struck a lion on a pit on a day when snow had fallen. Thanks for being here this evening. Go for the Lord. And then, it'll be all over the news for a year. You remember that lion, sir? Y'all know the invitation this evening. See Joanne's daughter with us visiting this evening. It's good to see you. Other than that, I don't think we have any visitors that I see. I'm sorry, Rebecca, I know Imogen's daughter's here as well. Albertine, it's good to see you, Albertine. My invitation is the same, but it's still one that's so timely. And y'all, I always give the invitation to those yet who are not yet in Christ. I also give the invitation for those who are in Christ. Maybe you have listened to the words this morning about influence, or you've listened to one of the words this afternoon, and you've noted that there's something in your life that you really need to fix, and you need God's forgiveness, and you need to do better. Now's the time to seek forgiveness from the Lord, and to seek encouragement from your brethren, that all of us may serve our Bible fully. If anyone needs to respond to the Lord's invitation, come forward.